In a clear show of force against North Korea, the U.S. flew four F-22 stealth fighter jets over South Korean airspace.
The FBI says Apple has until now refused to voluntarily cooperate with requests to help unlock shooter Syed Farouk's work-issued iPhone.
I intend to nominate somebody to present them to the American people, to present them to the Senate. I expect them to hold hearings. I expect there to be a vote.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
It's 5:09 and it is Wednesday, February 17th, 2016. Good morning. Welcome to the program. The news that we might be in the 50s, maybe even 60s by the weekend should be enough to shoot the markets up this morning. That's the best news I've heard in a couple of days. Maybe 60 by the weekend. How about that? Well, let's get right to the morning intel from the markets around the world. You heard a little bit of it there from Vic, but we'll tell you that the Asian stock markets are meandering all over the place today as investors weigh that preliminary agreement between Russia and Saudi Arabia to hold off on further increases in oil production, possibly alleviating a growing glut in supply. The big question is, what is Iran going to do? We'll tell you more about that coming up. We'll go live to London and talk to Tom Rivers in just a few minutes. Markets in Japan, Hong Kong, and Australia all down this morning. The Shanghai Composite is up. Yesterday on Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrials rose about 222 points, or about 1.5%. The S&P gained about 30 points, also about 1.5%. And the NASDAQ climbed about 98 points, or 2.5%, almost 2.5%. Federal Reserve official who played a key role in the government's response to the 2008 financial crisis says the government should do more to prevent a repeat of that crisis and consider whether the nation's biggest banks need to be broken up. Neel Kashkari says he believes the biggest banks still pose a significant and ongoing economic risk. He says he was a key architect of the 2008 federal bailout of the financial industry. He's now president of the Federal Reserve's regional bank in Minneapolis. Also this morning, as we mentioned at the top, oil is front and center on the minds of many. Investors are considering this agreement between Russia and Saudi Arabia, and the wild card appears to be Iran and what they're going to do about this. Let's bring in Tom Rivers, who's on with us from London this morning. Tom, welcome to the Opening Bell. Maybe you can give us a little bit more clearer idea of what's going on here.
Well, it looks like, and this comes from the Iranian oil minister, they're going to try to crank up about 500,000 barrels a day more to get to that level, pre-sanction level. They're currently cranking out December about 2.9 million barrels a day. So they want to get up to about, 3.4 and find that as their starting point. Now, you've got Russia, you've got Venezuela, you've got Qatar, and also Saudi Arabia saying, let's put a floor on this. And that extra glut is not going to help matters. And we've got the Venezuelan oil minister going to Iran today. Talk to of going to Iraq as well on that trip. See if they can try to get some heads together, because these four countries say, we will do this if others cooperate. But if countries like Iran do not cooperate, all bets are off. All deals are off.
Give us a sense of the glut and how it's playing on world markets, especially in Europe.
Well, again, here we're looking at Brent crude floating around the $33 level, and it's difficult because that's kind of at that balancing point. BP came out with his results a couple of days ago, not very good, and it's kind of at that level where is it black ink or red ink? It's right on that transom right now, and we're going to see exactly where things go. If there can be some kind of an agreement between OPEC, non-OPEC members, the price will slowly go up. But if there's no deal that can be struck, this thing's going to just be where it is right now, and that means a lot of these economies that are, reliant on oil, Russia, Venezuela, they're going to continue to feel the pinch big time.
You mentioned earlier that Venezuela was going to try to go to Iran and have some talks about this. Iran seems pretty set on resuming where it was before the sanctions, because it's been obviously quiet for a long time. And what is the likelihood of success there with those talks?
I wouldn't think it's very good. They're saying, look, while you've had the good times 2 years ago, we didn't. And we're going to re-enter where we should be. That's what they say. And then once that's done, we're not going to go above our level. But again, the problem in the global perspective is there already is this glut, and that's going to just add more to that problem.
And it makes you think, you know, was this even on the minds of people who were putting together the agreements that lifted the sanctions against Iran? Was this even on their radar as possibly something that would come out of right field and hurt everybody?
Well, I don't think it came out of right field. I think they'd have known this is going to be coming. And, you know, they just didn't seem very prepared or have an answer for it. And the Iranian response is, if you want to cut back, Saudi Arabia, why don't you do some cutting back? And we're not seeing that happen right now.
ABC News correspondent Tom Rivers with us this morning from London. Again, oil futures are right below the $30 a barrel level, trading up about 65 cents this morning at $29.69. We'll continue to monitor this story throughout the morning and here on the opening bell and throughout the later morning on the Steve Cochran Show as well.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the program. It's 520, and it's time to focus on the business of innovation and startups. Scott Catoon is the host of Tomorrow's Business Today on WGN at TBT on WGN. Scott is with us this morning. Good morning, Scott.
Good morning, Steve.
Well, let's talk first about Ravin. Is it Ravin Gandhi?
Ravin Gandhi.
Ravin Gandhi. He is an investor that's on your radar. Why?
You know, Ravin is one of the most interesting characters I have met so far in this startup world in Chicago. For starters, he runs a company called GMM Nonstick Coating, which is they manufacture the Teflon coating that is on every, you know, basically every cooking, cleaning, metal surface that you would ever purchase, George Foreman grills, etc. So it seems like a not really fancy, kind of sexy topic. However, he knows how to do it better than anyone. And in this career that he's had the opportunity to make a lot of money, and he has been asked to be a professor, adjunct, or whatever, at Columbia in New York and in Kellogg here in Northwestern. And he came up with a really interesting idea, and that is to find outside of Chicago interesting startup companies that he can invest in different entrepreneurs. And one such is a company out in New York called Keeney, which the general gist is there's a kiosk. You see them actually in 7-Elevens now where you can basically have your key scanned and it goes into a cloud. And then should you ever need another copy of the key or you lose your key or whatever the case may be, you can just go and order a new key made anywhere across the country. What's important here is that the New York-based company that has now to date, and if I recall correctly, has raised about $30 million. What it's showing is that there's investors here in Chicago who are now so comfortable with the investment game that they're not just investing small sums of money in Chicago-based companies, but Chicago funds are now investing in companies based in New York, Silicon Valley, even a couple in South by Southwest in Austin, Texas.
There's a lot to digest there, but I want to go back to the keys thing because I think this is pretty cool. If you lose your key anywhere, the copy of it will be in the cloud, and you can go to any key maker and have it remade.
That's correct.
That seems ingenious to me. Why haven't we thought of that before?
You know what? Here's the funny story about this. So Ravin was teaching at Columbia in New York City, and he encountered a student who had basically proposed this business plan as part of a class. And Ravin said, here's the deal. I will fund this idea up to the tune of $500,000, but you have to drop out of school today. Kid was, I believe, his second year at Columbia, and literally he dropped out of school and started this thing with Ravin immediately. And I believe it's been about a year and a half or two. And in that amount of time, they've raised $30 million in there and hundreds of 7-Elevens across the country.
And so this sounds like it's sort of a shark tank behind the scenes that's happening with Ravin. Is that what's going on here? Is that he's sort of running his own sort of shark tank?
You know what? I can't speak for him on whether what he wants to call it, but I'll tell you, he's come up with an ingenious model, and that is that he knows what it looks like to make and run a successful, scalable business, and he also knows the kind of person who needs to be or what they need to be like to run that kind of business. And so he identifies them and basically says, listen, I've made money this way, and if I can find a guy or a girl who looks just like me and works just like me, I'll invest in you. And it's working for him because he's, I think that's one of about four or five current investments that he has that are either in Chicago or in New York.
And the other thing, too, is that there are these ideas that might be floating around and percolating in colleges and schools where kids are still, you know, learning this sort of stuff. Is this an untapped area that we might see more ideas and innovation come from?
I think you're going to. I mean, we've talked, I think, briefly before. Northwestern has, you know, Innovation, Newvation, that's what they call it. But anyway, which is a platform for kids to pitch and come up with ideas. In Milwaukee, and now a place called the Commons, which is sort of a conglomerate of all of the schools. I think there's about 13 of them within the Milwaukee area that can come and students can pitch and get mentorship and things like that. I really do. I mean, I think that the education platform is missing a few pieces, and that lends itself to kids finding new ways to do new things. And guys like Ravine, and there's plenty of other guys out there who have a keen eye for, who just understand the principles of building a scalable business, and they're definitely looking for new ideas and places to get ahead of the concept curve, if you will.
I don't know how I feel about having somebody get out of school to do this, and I'm sure that others out there probably flinched when they heard that as well. But you are learning sort of life's lessons when you do something like this. What is the trade-off to leaving school early and tackling something like this, Scott?
Yeah, so that's the slippery slope, right? I mean, in the case of Kimi, and for whatever reason, I can't remember the name of the guy who actually started Kimi, but he actually told Ravine after he got the money, you know what, I actually haven't been going to class because I've been focusing on this and there's been so much attention around it that I was going to drop out anyway. I'm sure Ravine was thrilled to find out he could have had him, you know, could have had him do it for free. But at any rate, I think, and this is just my opinion on this, but I think that sometimes when you're in a school, there's an entrepreneur has a certain mentality that drives them to go 24 hours a day, and they just can't stop. And sometimes when you're in college, there's a lot of spare time, and there's a lot of things that are just sort of monotonous, and it's like, you know what, I don't really need to do this. I mean, imagine if you're trying to get, you know, a business degree. Do you think you're going to get a better education reading a book and sitting through this structured, you know, deal, or dropping out, going right into the fire and working with, you know, multimillionaire entrepreneurs, you know, every day, all day long? I think it's a kind of trial by fire, or drop into the fire kind of education.
Yeah,
depends on person.
Yeah, and I think there are strong arguments on both sides of that, because there are some, you know, amazing business people who never went to school a day in their life, college that is, and then there are others who do learn stuff in college. So I think it's kind of, you know, it depends on the person. Scott, can you stay with us on the opening bell? We'll continue our conversation coming up.
WGN Radio's Daily Conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Hey, good morning again. Welcome back to the program. It's 5:38, and we have some breaking business news that's coming out of the UK this morning. Sky News and the BBC are both reporting that the aerospace and transportation company Bombardier says it is going to cut 7,000 jobs. 1,340 of those jobs will be lost in the UK, and presumably the rest of those jobs will be cut from its aerospace and transportation sectors around the world. Again, the aerospace giant Bombardier says it's cutting 7,000 jobs, almost a third of those in the UK alone. Well, on to our next conversation this morning. Paul Ford is co-founder of Postlight. You can find him on Twitter at FTrain, and he's on with us this morning on the Opening Bell. Paul, good morning.
Thank you so much for having me. Good morning.
It's great to have you. Now, Postlight, for our listeners who don't know, you develop mobile apps for folks, right?
That's correct. Many people come to us asking for a mobile app, and then we start there and start to figure out what they really need in order to build big, scalable web services.
This is a unique opportunity for us to sort of get the behind-the-scenes view of how this begins and continues and develops into one of these apps that we use every day. Generally, where do you get these ideas? Where do the ideas come from, and where do the people that are bringing these apps to you generate their ideas?
Well, we're in New York City, so there's a lot of people who come in from media or finance, and they have a specific business goal. They want to reach a new group of people. Sometimes it's a small group of people. They want to get high net worth individuals to do something new with their private wealth accounts. That would be on one side. On the other side, you might have someone say, hey, we want to launch a new kind of magazine experience with these sort of people involved, and we need to hit, we want to hit 20 million people and really make everything tweetable. And so they walk in the door, and then we start to figure out the next step for us is to just listen for a while. And then after we understand who is going to be getting this app on their phone, we start to think about not just how the app looks and feels, but also what are the services that need that? What are the sort of, what's the big technologies that need to run underneath it to serve it? And that's when you hear the word APIs, that's what people are talking about. How do you get that data onto into the app from the web or from the cloud?
And so and I have lots of questions to ask. The first is from an innovation and startup standpoint. If somebody was thinking about doing this, what's the best advice you give them before they come to somebody like you?
Just know your audience. And I think it's, don't worry too much about the technology. It takes years and years to really learn and understand. At the risk of a self-plug, if you just search for the words, what is code? I wrote a big article for Bloomberg Businessweek. It's about 30,000 words long. And I tried to explain the entire world of software. And it's a good place to start. It was designed as a place to start for someone in middle management who wants to figure out what is going on and why it's so expensive.
It's actually funny because on your Twitter account, again, @ftrain, I believe, if I'm my eyes aren't at ftrain, yeah. Your pin tweet, your last pin tweet is, to be honest, I still have no idea what code is.
That's exactly right. It's such a big topic that you're never done. Even I know some true geniuses out in the world, and even they are still there. They have lots of work to do to understand the technology environment in which we exist.
The schools now are teaching code to kids as early as grade school and sometimes as early as first and second grade. Is that a good idea? Is that something that's going to help push us ahead of other countries in this area? Are we still far behind the curve?
I'm mixed on it because what you really need are straightforward logical thinking and good communication skills, actually, as much as you need the ability to, you know, what worries me is when I see people replacing foreign language with a programming language. Those are very different kinds of cultural skills, and one, you shouldn't say that one is equal to the other. The reality is that people do grow up with technology in a way that, I don't know how old you are, but I'm in my 40s, and I certainly didn't. And I do want young people to understand how the systems that they use work. You know, it's great for them to, if they're on Facebook all day, it would be nice if they could look at it and figure out what makes it go.
Yeah, I actually got through high school without even having a computer. So I'm maybe a little bit older than you in that area. But it's interesting to see all of these different moving parts come together, and you're sort of at the foundation of that. Do you get to see trends before the rest of us, and what are the trends these days in these areas?
I think I do. I think there's two things going on. There's a big world in Silicon Valley where suddenly everyone is a little worried about a contraction and they're talking about it. If you talk to venture capital people and you talk to those investors, their world of technology, startups, unicorns, et cetera, they're feeling the heat. And at the same time, they are excited about things like bots, little chat bots, and especially things like Slack, where people are talking, collaborative working tools. So that's a very specific world. The rest of us, and I include, I'm involved with that world, but at the same time, being in New York City, and I know people who also in Chicago, you're a little bit outside of that Silicon Valley monoculture. And for us, those of us who work in technology outside of the Valley, we don't feel that quite as much because tech is just embedded into every giant organization. And so there's tons of work. There's lots of stuff going on. And it almost feels like there's a new status quo in the last few years where everybody needs their apps to work. Everybody needs their mobile strategy to be good. Nobody's done. And everyone is starting to realize that it's expensive but necessary in order to make technology and to make mobile and to make the web work as part of their organization. So that's sort of how I see it. There's a very, like, super hot world in California that's slowing down, and the rest of us are just like, okay, here we go.
Paul, I'd like to introduce our resident expert on innovation and startup, Scott Catoon, who's on another one of our phone lines here. Scott, I want to bring you back into the conversation here to help question Paul Ford. Do you have any questions?
Paul, nice to talk to you.
Hey, thanks.
You know, one of the things that's interesting that you're talking about that I think could be a cool concept, and I don't know if you do it, I work with a few companies here, 8-Bit Studios and Snap Mobile, on the ability to reduce the upfront cost for building mobile technology for startup companies that maybe haven't raised their money yet. Do you ever work with companies, startup companies that, you know, maybe don't have the capital to pay what I'm sure is an expensive process for you, and maybe take an equity stake in some of these companies or some of the IP?
We do. We definitely do. It's right now we're new. We're about 6 months old. So we're pacing it very carefully. But both my partner and I in the past have definitely gone down that path. And that's the goal for us. The goal is for us to be able to build great things that we want to build. And it's one of the advantages of an agency business is that you can find some balance that way. You don't have the same risks and exposure as a startup. But absolutely, as we talk to people and we're starting to incubate a project now that we're very excited about. And we're definitely taking equity stakes as we go along. It's a way to have skin in the game, and it's, you know, basically what it means is that you work at cost or a little bit below, and it motivates you also to ship very quickly, get things done.
We're talking with co-founder Paul Ford of Postlight.com and Scott Catoon of Tomorrow's Business Today here on WGN Plus with us on the opening bell. Our conversation will continue in just a moment. Let's get back to our conversation here on the opening bell. We're talking with the co-founder of the company called Postlight.com. Paul Ford is with us on the phone from New York this morning at F Train. And Scott Catoon, this Tomorrow in Business Today, is with us as well. And Paul, before we went to the break, you were talking about some of the things that come through your company. And I'm just curious, I know you're the co-founder of Postlight. What is it like working with somebody else and a partner in these kinds of situations? Does that make your work easier or harder?
Much, much easier. My partner is a man named Rich Ciotti, and I've been advising and working with him for 4 or 5 years. And we decided to do this together, and it's a great balance. He brings the actual, I bring a lot of media experience. I bring a lot of product development experience, but his roots are much more solid. He's actually a lawyer. The one advice I'd give anyone starting a new agency of any kind is, boy, partner with a lawyer. He's got the contracts on lock. A lot of things that are puzzling or difficult take him about 5 minutes. And then he's very, very good at seeing big technical platforms in his head. I'm very good at thinking about the content ramifications, how he thinks about the boxes that you're going to make on the screen. I think about how people are going to put things into them. And so it works out really, really well. But we built this relationship over 4 or 5 years. I've seen a lot of partnerships that are built very quickly where there's much more stress on them.
Scott Catoon with us as well. Scott?
Yeah.
I just curious if you have any, if there's any advice that you can give startups like, 1871 and other innovators who are listening this morning, Paul, about, how they move forward. We had the discussion earlier about Ravi Gandhi, who, pulled one of his students out of class and gave him money to tackle an idea that he thought was great, and they're moving forward on that. Any thoughts on the education process? Should kids stay in school? Should they follow their dreams? Should they start companies before they're done with school? Where do you come down on all of this?
Well, the thing that I'm very careful about, you can always go back to school. The thing I'm careful about is you need to remember that these things, startups are not as, they're a little more like gambling than people like to admit, and good outcomes are very rare. I know tons of people in this space. I know a few who have become millionaires and a few have become billionaires. But for the most part, everyone is, programming or managing products and has enough money to get a nice mortgage and maybe goes and works for a big company for a while. Like the typical outcome is that you get a job. So a college degree can be incredibly helpful. Luckily, I think if you're a programmer, an engineer, or a product manager, you work in one of the very few industries where, while some organizations are completely obsessed with your degree, an awful lot of places are happy to talk to you just based on experience. It's not always the filter between whether you can get a job or not. But in general, all the regular rules about life and culture and where you should spend your time still apply, even though technology is overheated at this moment.
And what is the job outlook like in the area that you're working in right now? Are companies like yours hiring people?
We are, absolutely. You know, for us as an agency, it depends a little bit. We expand very, very carefully because we need to be sure that we have the client pipeline in place in order to you know, we don't like to bring somebody in on one project and then not have work for them 3 months later. So we hire, and we hire very, very slowly, and I've heard the process described as quite arduous, which I think is a fair assessment. But we're absolutely hiring. The people who are in our space are hiring. New York City has a very large tech community. I mean, actually, and I know well, Chicago does too. And there's just a lot of motion and a lot of large organizations and a lot of small ones, a lot of startups, a lot of big companies that need help. So it still feels like it's moving forward. I keep an eye on the overall, the sort of the macro economy, and I also keep an eye on Silicon Valley. But the reality is that from the ground, things just keep moving very quickly.
Again, we're talking with Paul Ford, the co-founder of Postlight.com. Paul, I understand you probably stayed up all night to be on the show this morning, and we appreciate that. Hopefully you'll get some sleep today.
Absolutely, absolutely. I'm finally getting my breath.
All right. Well, it's good having you on, and hopefully we can chat with you again sometime. Again, Paul Ford, the co-founder of Postlight.com. You can find him on Twitter at @ftrain. And there in the background is Scott Catoon. As always, thanks, Scott. Tomorrow's Business Today on WGN Plus. You can follow him at TBT on WGN. And believe it or not, that's our show for today. Thanks to our producer, Mary Sandberg. Production help from Kevin Powell and Ross Cochran. Our engineer today is Ben Cortez. We'll be back bright and early tomorrow morning with the opening bell. The Steve Cochran Show is next. Have a great day.